Welcome, everyone, to the Your Energy First podcast. I'm your host, Emily Marie, and it is such a pleasure to have you here today to co-create with you in this space and to talk about all things your energy. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I am so excited to bring back our guest, Sarah Hart, to talk about plant spirit medicine, the spiritual journey, spiritual awakening process, and probably a few other topics. And in part one, Sarah generously shared aspects of her journey and also what it has been like working with plant spirit medicine. And she had some lovely recommendations. So Sarah, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be here with you, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So for today's episode, last episode, we went over things at a little bit more of a high level. You shared some incredible stories with us. And one of the things in particular, I wanted to sort of bridge today in our conversation is, what have you, we're just going to jump right into it, by the way.
Okay. All right.
When you can either speak from personal experience, client experience, or both, what can someone expect who says, you know what, I'm ready to heal, or like make myself even happier? You know, some people have things happen to them in this current lifetime that's explicitly meant to heal. And then other people say, I feel an internal dissatisfaction, an internal discomfort, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know that there's something for me here, more for me here. So when someone journeys with plant medicine in what I'm going to call a healthy way, you can define, actually, what is a healthy way? Let's start there. What would you describe, you know, someone who journeys with plant medicine, what does a more of a positive approach to it look like?
Mm-hmm.
And you can switch up my language if I'm not using the correct terms.
Yeah, no, a healthy way, what first comes to mind when you say that is, I think about how in, you know, Western culture, you know, pharmaceutical medicine, we often think about, you know, taking a pill and, you know, we'll feel better. And I think that there's a different orientation to keep in mind or to keep in heart when we're working with plant medicines or other sacred allies in this way. And that is that having a certain amount of reverence and respect that you're engaging with the spirit of the medicine. And so I think that if we are orienting towards the medicine as we are engaging a spirit, that's another being. So then that brings in relationship. And when we're in relationship in a healthy way, then we wouldn't be necessarily exploiting the medicine in such a way, like using it as a quick fix, but rather seeing it as a relationship that has a beginning and has an arc of time for however long you engage that medicine. So, and I would say that most people in my experience, like 95% of people who approach doing this work, do have a certain amount of like respect or reverence, even if it's the mystery that they don't quite understand yet. They typically discover in their process of engaging these medicines that, oh, there is another intelligence that is present, that is benevolent and healing and kind, even if sometimes we have to learn hard lessons.
Let's touch on the arc of time to start. So you mentioned that. I like that you are calling it a relationship too. And what comes to mind for me is the type of relationship where, you know, relationships can feel like a lot of work, but it's rewarding work. And this relationship, when you mentioned that the spirit is benevolent, it feels a little bit more light, even though the lessons are tougher. So what do you mean when you say an arc of time? Because I can see how, at least again in Western society, we think, oh, relationships should be forever in order for them to be real, valid, depth, meaningful, deep, meaningful.
Yeah. So can give an example. When I started working with the plant medicine, this was about a decade ago, ayahuasca, I felt that medicine start to show up in my field and start to kind of come into relationship with me, where there was a curiosity of like, huh, this is a different kind of spirit and intelligence that is in some ways helping me prepare and do some of the kind of legwork in getting ready to be in a place where I felt like I had the courage and the, you know, desire to embark on that journey. And that relationship wasn't something that kind of like hit me all at once when I started working with that medicine. This is the intelligence part of spirit. It naturally met me where I was at and then continued to create and build trust and safety with me in relationship as I continued to work with her. Now it's been probably 3 or 4 years since I've actually worked with that particular medicine, but I still feel a relationship with her spirit that has continued. So I think that's the one of the really beautiful aspects of working with some of these different allies. If you're open to it, that relationship can start before you work with the medicine, and it can continue months, years after you work with that medicine. That relationship, that heart connection is really where I feel it. Can continue, you know, over time.
When you say that you sensed it entering into your awareness, tangibly, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah. Well, I had started reading about it. I think that's where it started for me, is I think I had started reading books about it, and then I started to kind of feel in meditation or gardening or, you know, kind of in the day-to-day, this sort of I don't know if echolocation, you know, trying to kind of describe, but sort of this feeling of reverberation of like, oh, there's something here to communicate with me that's kind of putting a tendril out. And then I'm picking up on that. I'm like, I kind of went into conversation and a wondering about what would it be like to engage my healing process with this particular medicine. And so a conversation, like an energetic conversation begun, until I got to the place where the conditions were such that the opportunities presented themselves, which was quite synchronistic and how it occurs. I think lots of people who find their way on this path, certainly, you know, a decade or more ago when it was less popular, like there were things that kind of had to align to make it possible. Now it's a lot more readily available. You can look it up on the internet, but it certainly did have this magical quality that's coming to mind, as far as the synchronicities and conversations and opportunities that opened up.
When you say that you had a conversation, was that during a meditation? Was it while you're emptying the dishwasher?
Both.
What was that conversation like?
Yeah, almost like one of the ways I could probably describe it, which might make sense for some of your listeners who communicate with spirit, is for me, the way that shows up is a sense of the energy in my space, in my energy field.
Yeah.
And oftentimes there's a direction where that comes from. So for me, when I'm thinking back to that, it was like up and right or something like that is where I was like this plant spirit. And the more I kind of felt her, I think it sort of allowed me to tune into the essence a little bit more and feel the benevolence and feel that there was this like warmth and care, no pressure or anything, but just this like, yeah, I'm available on your journey or on your path. And if you're open to coming into relationship before we even, you know, work together in the physical by, you know, drinking this particular medicine, I'm here. So it kind of felt like a get to know you. So I sensed it in my energy. And then I also, just in the same way that I might communicate with a spirit in my, you know, mind, it also felt like that as well.
So you are reading up about ayahuasca, you start to feel her energy present itself and you choose to engage, and positive, I would say, like creation of a relationship. So when you first started learning more about her, did you get online and book your ayahuasca ceremony immediately?
No, I didn't, because I didn't. I actually had friends that were in my community who already had relationships with her and had kind of opened the door for me and said, hey, there's somebody that you might want to talk to who could support you in exploring this more deeply. And so it was the kind of underground network of, you know, working with plant medicine.
Yeah. I like hearing how, because what I'm hearing you say is that it's not just about that moment where you drank the medicine and had the experience for the following hour, few hours, but it's the whole thing. It's from the first conscious connection point and leading up to that and afterwards.
Yeah.
And that to me is the spiritual journey and is the spiritual process.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I had a year ago, I'm going to share a personal tidbit here. Someone I trust say to me, she's a holistic practitioner. She goes, I think you would really like, I've actually never said this out loud. Is it Cambo? Combo?
Mm-hmm. Combo. You got combo. It.
Yeah. Yep. And I go, no. I said, no. My first reaction was no. Not going to do any of that stuff. And then very gently, the combo spirit came to me and was coming to me. And it's been a year. And so when I felt like it was time, I start doing more research. I set my intentions. I asked the network for a referral, and I'm still taking my time. I haven't booked anything yet. I can feel it arising within my heart and my soul, my spirit, my light, that it's coming up. And I also can see this weaving of private personal work I've been doing internally with myself. And I'm like, oh, okay. And now it's time to receive some additional support here and help with this transition. So it feels really good. And there hasn't been a rush. I could have gone online and booked the nearest practitioner, or, you know, this person recommended someone in California. And so, yeah. And instead it was that I'm going to wait and still enjoy it. And then I've learned a lot about plant spirit and the engagement of them from you.
Oh, Emily. Well, what you're describing, you know, the way that you're orienting towards it really is that what I would say, like a healthy, intentional way of working with the medicine, because I think that when we slow down and like allow ourselves, especially for those that are really sensitive and already quite open, to like really attune towards like what is the right timing for your spirit to come into even, you know, deeper relationship with the spirit of, you know, combo or, you know, a plant medicine, when you actually show up to have that experience, I think that most people kind of get a feedback of like, yes, it actually, the bottom opens up even more because all parts of you were aligned and ready and it's a yes. So then the healing can go even deeper than if we're pushing ourselves to open before the time is, you know, right for us.
Mm. That makes perfect sense. One of the things you had mentioned is hard lessons, walking us through the hard lessons. I'm not even sure what my question is around this, yet the question is so present. I think sometimes we fear the hard lessons because we fear it's almost that idea of being in trouble by a teacher or a parent when we were kids. What would you say has been the journey for you in learning lessons through plant spirit medicine?
My goodness. So many, for sure. I would say that it's probably for as long as I continue to be on this path, there will be hard lessons to learn. I don't know that there's ever a point in time where it does get easier. The harder lessons get easier because our inner resilience and capacity grows. And I would say that one of the ways that I think about it, not just for myself, but also just kind of how we're organized as humans, is kind of being like peeling back the layers of an onion. So for me, in regards to, you know, learning hard lessons, that was like peeling back an initial layer that needed to be revealed to me on a more conscious level. So it really stirred up what was unconscious in my mind, in my emotional sort of landscape. And I know at first when this layer came up to be cleared and be revealed, it was really uncomfortable. I kind of tried to find my way around it by, you know, thinking, maybe I can go around the right. Well, maybe I can go above it. Maybe I can go below it. So
of course
I had all these, you know, clever defense mechanisms to try and
don't we all
play around, you know, and it's like, you know, bravo, very clever, good effort. But what I found is that the only way through, it's a kind of a cliche saying, but there's truth to it. The only way out is through. And so it got easier and easier when a layer would come up to be cleared. I could notice the parts of myself that were like, oh, let's try to find a way. And then it would be like, it would just dawn on me and I would realize there is no way. There's no way around this, no matter how hard you try. And so the like being with what's hard, being with discomfort, being with parts of ourselves that are, you know, needing healing and needing to grow, or even just letting go of things that aren't ours, that don't serve us. There was a lot of, you know, as I got deeper into those layers of healing, the other side of being with what's hard is it fortified my spirit. It fortified my heart. Mm. And, you know, that energy inside of me, that knowing and that strength grew and gave me the energy that I needed to kind of dive back in to clear more layers. And the layers, I would say, in some ways, sometimes when you get to that kind of like middle realm of the onion tend to be some of the harder places because they're more deeply buried, but you have more capacity to be with them. And what you gain out of those experiences, it is all worth it ultimately.
Right, right. When there's a couple of things that are coming through as you share, and one of the things I think about is how you mentioned the onion, and sometimes those the innermost inner part of an onion is the part that we've worked the hardest to work around.
Yeah.
And I've seen in myself, in my own personal work, and in clients' work, there can be an event, or it could be something that's just a normal part of your day to day, maybe a habit that you're just tired of it being your habit and you're ready for a new one, that can take you really deep. So I share this because there's so much blooming consciously in the world around healing, growth, expansion, experience of life. And while some people can pinpoint what it is that they're working on, some people can't quite pinpoint it, and that's okay too. If you're someone who simply just seeks or yearns for more of an inner peace, an inner happiness, a deep inner happiness, you can find that through this work with the right practitioner, I would assume.
Yeah. I think that something that's so beautiful is that really, you know, I see my role as kind of being a midwife to the souls of others. And it's just like constantly bearing witness to people discovering, you know, the center of the onion inside of themselves, mm-hmm. holding space for whatever is arising, but that, you know, nobody can do it for us. Ultimately, we, you know, have to do the work to get there ourselves. And so sometimes people have a sense about what they might need to navigate to kind of get there. They kind of have a sense about like what their blocks are. More often than not, we're surprised a little bit by some of the things that might show up to be cleared that we didn't think were you know, relevant or weren't necessarily on the top of mind. I'm just thinking about moments where people on their healing journeys sometimes encounter things that were said to them in the school system, or a comment that was made by a parent that they didn't necessarily consciously remember, but created a belief somewhere inside of themselves that they felt like they had to compartmentalize and hide a part of their authenticity or their spark. And ultimately, you know, what I witness people doing is uncovering that spark even more, and bringing even more of their authenticity, you know, forward.
Mm-hmm. You shared that, and what came through is how there also seems to be this layer around, I've done the work or I'm doing the work, and we still carry this, am I enough yet? And we know life's a journey. We know it's a never, the onion is the never-ending onion. Onion's an ironic example, considering onions are that one veggie that make you kind of cry. Or are onions a fruit? Anyway, no, they don't have a seed. It's a veggie. So what would you say to someone, you know, the vibe, the energy of this episode feels like this leaning back and kind of relaxing into things a little bit and being less intensive about our journey and a little bit more adaptable to the waves of the seasons of our lives, in that, oh, it's a season, you know, for me, there's an upcoming season of intensity around combo. And then that too shall have its own unique way of weaving itself into my life. Yet at the same time, I'm not sitting here scrutinizing or thinking I'm not enough to show up for the work that I do now because I don't have all of this stuff cleared yet. So if someone, how often do you see someone continue with medicine because they feel, and maybe this isn't in your practice, maybe it's in general, because they feel I've got to get to that point where I've cleared it and I've healed it and I'm worthy?
Yeah, well, so one of the things that I'm thinking about is well, really, I think what you're describing is kind of the journey that we all have to take because it's not really set up in our culture yet, is a journey of self-compassion. And I feel like that is a role that facilitators are really helping people who are on the medicine journey discover and cultivate inside of themselves, because if we're orienting towards our healing process, like there's this thing, you know, inside of me that I have to clear. And once I clear it or even get rid of it, I'll be better. I'll be more, I'll be happier. And really the invitation, I think is how can I turn towards the places inside of myself that are wanting to be transformed, that may have challenges or difficulty? How can I turn towards it with curiosity, a warmness, a kindness? And that's like that self-compassion piece. Because when we orient in that way towards these places inside of ourselves, naturally, that's what actually creates the conditions for those places to clear, is that like softening of acceptance and compassion. I actually think that's something that almost every single person that I've worked with, and myself included, has to learn and cultivate. Of there's not anything inside of you that is like so bad or so wrong that it needs to be gotten rid of. It's like, actually, how can we bring more love inside? And that is what starts to transform. And by that point, you're like, oh, I don't need to get rid of this thing. My relationship to it changes that thing. And oftentimes these parts of ourselves become our allies and inner support and inner, you know, wisdom as a result.
You mentioned two things. You mentioned softening. What is softening for you?
Yeah. So if there's something inside where my impulse is like, oh, get it out of here, like, you know, or how can I, you know, compartmentalize this a little bit more, push it off to the side, that requires a lot of energy to kind of hold those things at bay versus, you know, and I might try that out. I might try that out as a great tactic at first versus then instead letting my own wisdom come forward of, okay, might ask myself, Sarah, how can you meet this with more curiosity? Like, I love what curiosity is and what it does in this system, because if I'm curious, I can't be against it or be in fear of it. I'm actually opening my energy. And in that opening of my energy, my heart opens, and then I feel inside of myself, everything kind of relax and soften. So then the urgency to have it be different isn't necessarily present for me in the way it was before.
That's beautiful. The second thing you mentioned is love. And Love is such an interesting term and can mean so many different things. How has your personal experience around love evolved for you, where it sits today versus maybe where you felt around love or the significance of love when you first started, and not started, we're always on this spiritual journey, maybe like a decade ago, when you started more consciously in this space?
Yeah, I think love, the lessons that I've learned about love and the experience of love for myself were partly forged through, you know, loss and through death, of having those experiences really break my heart open to the magnitude of love that I didn't know I could feel was possible. And then also, I think on my spiritual journey and spiritual path, what has been happening over time is as things heal and as things clear, I experience the heart space like continuing to stretch and continuing to open and be able to love more. So love others more, love myself more. It gives me greater access to the space inside of myself where I think I feel we're all, you know, interconnected, versus a more contracted space of like me and I'm separate and everybody is kind of, you know, over there. And then there's also the love that you experience when you are in relationship with spirit or in service to spirit, the love of those beings that come forward and that they encompass or embody, the magnitude of that like stretches me even more to feel even more love. So I haven't discovered really actually the edges or bounds of my heart yet, because it just keeps unfolding.
When you said how you love others, how has that experience felt differently today versus before? And let's not even look at people in your inner circle, but even people, you know, just that you may come across out in the world or experience through social media. Great connector.
I feel like I have to go back so, so many years to think about a before and, you know, a, you know, a now, a present day. Yeah, when I think about love for others, I think it feels very much tied to this particular lifetime and this path of kind of what motivates my walk in the world, what motivates my work in the world, why I do what I do, is because at the very core of it is this deep feeling of loving humanity so much and wanting to make a contribution to the suffering of my, you know, fellow human beings. And as hard as it is to be here on this planet sometimes, I think to myself, yeah, I really love humanity. I would come back again to continue to be in service to the healing and expansion and expression of what's possible for us. And I think that before, when I was on a path that was a little bit more conventional, that would not have been a path that would have allowed the fullest expression of myself or the love to flow through me. I'm sure that I would have brought love to anything I would have done, but it wouldn't have had the kind of contribution or impact that I feel like I'm really in service to. So that would be maybe the contrast, is when I think about that more conventional path, it feels like kind of being put in a smaller box, feels a little bit more confining. It also feels sad when I think about it, that I don't think I could ever go back there, versus now there's no walls to that box.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Humanity. This is one of the questions I've asked, you know, my guides, spirit being the activation of source energy that's available to everyone. I've asked, you know, what's the greater story around everybody's different conditions? And the simplest answer that they've ever given me is contrast. We're here for contrast. Now, I leave it at that, because it's not clearly, how did this all come to that some people come in different ways, in different lives and lifestyles. And I don't think any of us would consciously choose any of that. I think there's some very brave souls that do. So when it comes to this work and growing up in a Western culture, who I do believe is shifting, and we are turning into a much more gracious for each other, supportive of each other way of living, I think we really need, I see such a need for us to also help people transition to the different stages of life too. So how has your work evolved around, you know, I'm going to take a step back for a moment, because like for me, I kind of fell into Reiki, which is a traditional Japanese work, artwork, craft. And I remember at the time the instructor said how much they honored the lineage of this beautiful system. And I appreciated that. And then as I evolved in my own personal practice, Reiki sort of dissolved in my practice and my own version came through. And I look back and I'm thinking, you know, would I have learned Reiki from that person? Would I have learned it from a traditional Japanese practitioner? There were some things inside me that felt very true. Like I wouldn't call myself a Reiki master, because in the traditional sense, you had to be practicing for 20 years and, you know, you can get the certification over the weekend online. And there's nothing wrong with that too, because the way you're called is the way you're called. So I look at now, even when I look at Combo and I have a referral for that, I was also looking at the different practitioners. And I said, how did they learn? Why? Why are they practicing this? Where are they getting their medicine? How is the medicine? How are the frogs being supported when they're extracting this medicine? Things like that, because you have to be so mindful of these things. And then of course we get into the whole aspect of, should people even charge for spiritual work? So when it comes to this multi-layered topic, how have you found approaching this work, like personally, from the sense of the awareness of, you know, the state we were born in, which everybody's a little bit different, and how have you approached your practice today in the sense of being aware that there's a multitude of people who need this work, that there's a multitude of ways to do this work, that there's no perfect path? So this is a big question and also a general question. But how have you found your approach to your own private medicine and the practice you share with clients from this greater awareness today?
Yeah. Well, I think and by the way, Emily, my journey to energy healing was with Reiki too, back when I was 20. So it seems to be the on-ramp for a lot of energy.
For sure.
And it totally, changed for me over the years as well. Still, grateful that that's where the roots
absolutely
started. But, what was coming up for me as you were kind of formulating this question, there's no right way. There are so many different ways to approach this work. There are so many different ways to hold medicine space. But I think for myself, how I orient towards it in a way that feels in alignment and feels in integrity, and also meets people where they're at, is I would say that first and foremost, I hold sort of a animist perspective. So, earth honoring perspective, which many different cultures across the globe, no matter your ancestral lineage, if you go back far enough before religion and things like that, when we were more connected to the earth, that's something that I really draw on. And then it was strengthened by tending to and doing healing work with my own ancestral lineages, which is an ongoing process that I am continuing to do. But one of the benefits of that is it's possible to link up with way, way, way back luminous, wise, and compassionate ancestors that had spiritual practices and processes for engaging spirit, for engaging the spirits of earth, and for healing. And I think that it has been through those connections, I'll just call them guides, that an authenticity of how I hold this work started to feel really connected to my own roots, while at the same time recognizing that not everybody that I work with has the same ancestral lineages. So I get really curious about where their people come from and what, practices they know about or don't know about. Sometimes we discover that together, of making room for that to come forward for them, because it's going to be most aligned with their healing and most aligned with their path. So I would say that that has the biggest influences: animism, earth honoring, and, Northern European, mostly Northern European ancestral practices.
Interesting. What's an ancestor to you?
Yeah, so I think of an ancestor as being different than perhaps some of the more recent dead, because not all of the recent dead are equally well compared to, a spirit that is an ancestor. When I feel the vibration of a being that is a ancestor or has been ancestralized, we might call that, they are healthy, healed, and whole, and have a positive impact and influence on our lives if we choose to be in relationship with them. And we can also engage them to help heal the dead that may not be fully well in spirit yet. And so there's a layer of, actually, it's a layer of personal healing, familial healing in our lineages, but also cultural healing that occurs, with the ones where I think about the last, many hundred years, there's a lot of healing and tending that the well ancestors have the capacity to help heal, and we're holding space for that process.
It's pretty incredible. Does everyone have ancestors?
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
I know there's someone out there as thinking to themselves, do I have ancestors?
Yeah.
So healing our culture, and I want to touch on this topic, not touch on, but have a frank conversation around the fact that, you know, as white women, we're born into this culture that doesn't necessarily at its core yet have a process for us and the men to be spiritual. We've relied on religion. We have, you know, there's been outskirts of maybe witchcraft, pagan rituals, however you want to define, or there's, you know, sort of painted the extreme, you know, people that decide to stop shaving and go off the grid, and there's nothing wrong with shaving or not shaving. I'm just pointing a picture of what society tells us is, you know, spiritual, not spiritual. And how have you found navigating this as a practitioner, you know, making your services available to someone who feels called to work with you, right? And how have you worked that out in your practice? And also, I want to say, I don't just want to put you on the spot. I can also share my aspect and story around this. You know, I see what I often see happen is people, you know, we are called internally to this deeper work. And because other cultures have practices in place, people will go to those practices and make them their own and sometimes trample on them. Good people, well-intentioned people, and then sometimes our ego gets in the way. And I think everybody does intend to do well, yet we do still hurt people. Mm-hmm. And so how have you found this balance of integrating the awareness, the learning into your practice, into your self-work? We're going to start there.
Yeah. So it goes back to ancestral healing and lineage repair and the recovering of recovering of a healing path. So the first thing that I'll say is that I specifically don't serve certain medicines that come from specific indigenous cultures, because like for me, I know that there are other white people that might choose to do that, and I'm no judgment, but for me, it doesn't feel ethical. And so I also don't utilize practices that I haven't been given permission to share, or that come from, you know, other indigenous cultures. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that opened up for me when I started, on my spirit team, really working with some really beautiful ancestors, is they started to kind of pave the way to spiritual practices that have been forgotten, or maybe aren't written about or well known because they were destroyed, or it was before written history. And so what's something that's really, really beautiful is that in Northern European traditions, there actually is processes for plant spirit mediumship, for journeying. And so I've been fortunate to find teachers to learn from, and that informs my practices personally and spiritually, of how I might engage the land, the spirit of place, the plants that I'm working with in a spiritual relationship, not necessarily, you know, taking them. The other thing that comes to heart is giving back. So giving back to the people of place. So where I live, that's the Chinook people. They have a online forum to donate. So a certain amount of money each month goes to them. And that's my way of feeling into reciprocity of how blessed and how fortunate I feel that I get to live in this space on this land, but then that I'm also carrying out healing work on this land. So it's honoring the ancestors of this land who lived here before me. So that's one aspect that feels important to my work. And then the other is that just acknowledging privilege in the realm of not everybody who comes to work with me has the same access to resources or privilege. And so setting it up in a way that I can meet people, you know, where they're at on that skill or on that scale rather, so that people who do have an abundance of resources and want to offset the costs for others can engage where they're at and where they feel comfortable. So there's kind of this like sense of reciprocity and abundance that is life-giving, even if people don't know one another who might be supporting one another.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing those things. Some people have the impression that privilege means you didn't have to work hard at something, or that you don't have your own challenges in life. So for the sake of this conversation, what is privilege?
Yeah, so that is, I mean, it's a really big topic, but one of the things that I can say about privilege is, first and foremost is that, you know, there's privilege. I'll just talk about, you know, my own intersection of privilege of being a, you know, white woman who owns a home and who has access to resources and support in my community and has been able to get the education and skills that I've needed and mentorship that I've needed to be able to build up my practice. And so there's a certain amount of like social privilege and economic privilege that's there. And that also doesn't mean at the same time that there aren't like difficulties or struggles or adversity that I've experienced in my life. But privilege from like a broader umbrella, I'm just formulating my thought, Emily. So
you're good. You're so, it's a, such a loaded question. Yeah. And I'll give you a pause there and share too that in my own personal work, what it looked like before this more mass spiritual awakening in these last few years, I would say before something felt off and that was subconscious to me. And now as I see consciously how our Western culture has been set up and framed to, in a very, you know, escalate people who look a certain way, that is absolutely bone's truth. What I can see now is how things are finally turning slowly, very slowly, and it's requiring a lot of effort on a lot of people's parts, especially a lot of the people who have been the most affected by it. And it's one of the things that I've noticed the most is how much it's turned me towards my heart, which is confusing, not to say that the heart isn't the confusing piece. It's coming from that space instead of from my mind, instead of from my conditioning. And I'm not talking about we're all one, lovey-dovey. I'm not talking about, you know, and I think a lot of people feel connection to certain, getting back to the practices piece. I think people feel a lot of, you know, I'm living in North America. And so for a lot of Native American cultures, I feel a lot of connection there. Is that because I had past lives? Maybe, but it's not my current life. So anything around Indigenous cultures locally, I actually keep private to myself. I don't actually outwardly practice or share anything. And then continue to simply just be aware where my own biases have been conditioned. And then I go back into, I physically go back into my heart space with a curiosity instead of anything else. And I let it all exist. And again, that's not even a direct buttoned up answer. We're just openly talking about, you know, in my private containers, it's started to come up with some of, like, as a other white women practitioners will share their journey. And I'm glad that we're talking about these things openly, awkwardly, unsure of the resolution, yet still continuing to move forward in the sense of, I really think that the feminine spirit in all of us, in everyone, is what's going to ultimately help us rise. And I'm excited for the masculine who will realize a heartier, more purposeful, more rewarding role for the masculine aspect of our experience. How do you even put all of this into words? It's a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting thing. There was a time where I will share, you know, how do we notice the nuances of where we might be stepping over someone's boundaries. And I'd been invited to a heart opening ceremony, and this wonderful woman was serving cacao, and I didn't know what cacao was. I thought it was hot chocolate. I was confused. I sipped it before we got started. I was like, oopsies. I felt so bad. I set it down. And then she starts speaking about the Native practices, and I thought, oh, something feels off here. I do believe she was very well intentioned, but I was like, something feels off. And so I sat with myself and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just set the intention that whatever's done is in honor of the experience. And then later I was invited to a cacao ceremony from people from Mexico, and it was phenomenal. And again, I keep that as a personal private practice to me when I feel called, but I would never repeat that ceremony unless it was something I felt really called to do for some reason with the proper practice. This whole topic is an ongoing evolution of sorts.
Yeah, I think what you're, you know, speaking to, Emily, is something that, especially in regards to kind of the psychedelic renaissance, is these are like really big conversations that are happening in the field around being in right relationship with the medicine that you're working with. And so that would also mean that you are in right relationship with the lineages and the cultures that they come from. And some of the medicines don't have lineages because they were created in a lab. And so those lineages are, you know, being created in the present moment in regards to best practices. But
wait, what's created in a lab?
So
are people doing ceremony with meth?
Oh, no, but medicines like that we might call heart medicine or MDMA, that's created.
Oh, you
know, so that's a synthetic medicine. So one of the things that I will say is that, you know, sometimes we can think that because the medicine comes from the earth or, you know, a plant, that it somehow might be more healing or better than a synthetic medicine. And
I have that bias. I totally think that.
And I would say that in my own experience, that hasn't been what has happened for me, but it also hasn't been what I've seen in clients. So for instance, if somebody were to work with plant medicines like mushrooms or something like that, and you're working with that at a healing dose or a therapeutic dose, for some people with certain trauma histories or just how they are organized as a person, that can be a very overwhelming experience for them and their system, and actually take more time to get them grounded and stabilized after the experience, even though some destabilization in healing trauma is unavoidable. Versus if you were to work with that same person and instead you started with a heart medicine, something like MDMA, that actually can be much more healing and much more gentle for that person, because what it does is instead it kind of builds up inside of a person what is already really good, what is already working really well. And when you're working with some plant medicines, and I'm speaking about mushrooms in this case, mushrooms, they can of course build those things up, but actually they do a lot more deconstructing. And sometimes in the healing process, it's better to build up the sense of self, build up a sense of self-love and compassion and resiliency before we go in there and start deconstructing a person's psyche.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So how would one approach, say, a lab like an MDMA? So how does that enter into one's personal equation? Is it similarly the way that another plant spirit medicine would, that they just start to feel its energy?
Yep. I would say that one of the things that people can kind of, that we have a tendency towards, we have a tendency to kind of anthropomorphize things, and in a way that you can't necessarily do that with a synthetic medicine. In a way, it kind of expands your awareness in the realm of formlessness. And I think of it more as light. That is heart-centered, that has a healing intelligence, that is moving us more towards our own wholeness.
Where does the healing intelligence come from?
Source.
Because I'm literally picturing, a couple years ago, a girlfriend and I went up to Canada, and she brought like Sour Patch Kids, I think, in the car. I was like, I haven't had Sour Patch Kids in forever. And I took a few bites and I got sick as a dog. I mean, just, it was like someone took a knife to my insides, and I immediately got the message that this is all made in a lab. So I'm have this incorrect association when you say, because to me, I'm like, well, Sour Patch Kids don't contain light source healing energy, but they're all made in the lab. So I'm literally asking, where does the connection come from? Where does the light come through while this is being created in the lab with MDMA? Is it from you, the practitioner? Well, you know what I mean when I say that. Is it the intention by which you use the medicine?
I would say it's the intention. But then I would also say that it's the intention of the people that create these things. So, you know, there's a wide spectrum here. There's people who create these things for the black market and, you know, clubs and, you know, things like that. Those medicines are not created with the same intentions, and are adulterated by the time, you know, people get them, versus you know, there's also people that create these medicines for therapists to have access, to be able to work with their clients in a safe way. And so that's a very different, you know, intention for the person creating it, but also what it's being, you know, utilized for. So, and then, you know, the person who is working with the medicine, something that is really astounding, Emily, and like also simultaneously sometimes breaks my heart, is that, you know, a synthetic heart medicine has the capacity for some people to experience self-love for the very first time in their life, of like what that actually is.
Wow.
And it's utilized in Europe actually for many, many, many decades now, that when there was a loss in somebody's life, of somebody that was close to them, a child, spouse, you know, partner, the therapists would provide this heart medicine to them as a way to help them heal with the grief and the loss process. And then, you know, if folks are interested, there's a really beautiful documentary called Trips of Compassion, where three different individuals who experience different degrees of trauma in their life work with heart medicine over a period of a year, intentionally and really well held, and are able to come out of it with a greater sense of wholeness and healing. So really, we have to kind of like undo some of our own conditioning around, you know, from the earth is better. It's not a black and white, like one is better than the other. It's more about, you know, who is this person in front of you? What is their history? What are they wanting to heal? What are they wanting to work on? If it was to access greater self-love or to heal from PTSD or complex trauma, you know, you would, as a provider, I would lean more towards something that isn't going to challenge or overwhelm their system too much, but I know reliably can help build up what is already good inside of them. And that will give them the foundation then to work their way towards something that might be a little bit more far out there as far as challenging their sense of reality and who they are.
Why should someone not feel like a failure or like they're taking the easy way out by working with the medicine to support them?
Yeah, because being a human being sometimes is really hard, and healing sometimes is really hard. And the amount of like time and energy it can take, like doing therapy and like say over a decade and still not getting to the place where you're getting at kind of the root issues, it's not time wasted, of course, not at all. But what I have seen from people is it really quickens the healing path for them. And when that happens, that is life-changing. But then also their children or their partners or their spouse, their community, everybody, you know, benefits.
Preparing the body. Is there anything you recommend? And I know each medicine is different, but say someone's curious, you know, maybe 6 months from now, maybe a year from now, they're going to embark on a medicine journey, we'll call it, whether it's lab or plant. And now I'm wondering if we can put healing light into Sour Patch Kids. And my guides are like, of course you can, but why would you? Oh, dear Lord. So does one need to do anything to prepare the body? Is there anything? And I know this is, again, a very broad question. But again, if someone's 6 months out, 12 months out, is there anything that they can do to prepare now?
Totally. So if somebody is orienting towards it 6 months out or 12 months out, and they're wanting to know, is there anything that they could do to prepare themselves? I would say that leaning into the practices, spiritual practices, mindfulness or movement practices, time spent in nature, like upping that a little bit more can be helpful. I also really like journaling and reflective practices to kind of feel into like an intention of like, why would I want to be doing this? What am I hoping to get from this experience? And then allowing that intention to evolve over time and kind of keep checking in and seeing how it might be changing as you're changing, as you're getting close to that particular moment in time. So anything you can do that is nourishing to your mind, body, and soul that feels sustainable and resonates with you, I would say to do that. And then also, I think it's really important to name that if you do nothing at all, that that's okay too. That some people are in a particular place in their mental health or just in their life that they don't have a lot of extra energy to give, and not making that be a barrier or thinking that you somehow can't engage in this work because of that. So really, again, approaching this process with wherever you're at.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Is there anything you feel called to share that we haven't discussed the second time around? I know there will be more conversations at some point in the future. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd want to share with this community, this virtual community from around the world who gathers on this podcast to deepen their own sense of self, understanding, healing, expansive living, thriving even, by means in which you've had your own experiences? And
yeah, I think what I would say is that there are numerous paths to expanding one's consciousness that don't include working with medicine. Breath work is an excellent one. Dance and movement is another excellent one. Fasting and being in nature on a, you know, vision quest is another excellent one. And there are many, many other spiritual paths and traditions that are aimed at kind of, they're all pointing to the same place. And so how I hold this is that plant medicine is not the only path. It's one path. And I think it's important to have a diverse toolkit, spiritual toolkit. So that's not the only path or practice that I follow. There's lots of other things that I enjoy doing too. So yeah, in this psychedelic renaissance, there can be a romanticization about it and about it being kind of the be all end all. And it has tremendous capacity for healing, growth, transformation, but it isn't the only path. So really just wanting to name that for some people, it isn't for them, and that's okay. And for some people who are, like you've described, Emily, as already being like, so, you know, the world is already kind of psychedelic for you. Why would you want to, you know, amplify that even more? Some people definitely feel that way. So just making room for all experiences, all orientations to healing, that I think there's room for everybody.
Thank you. I'm very grateful for you. I'm grateful because, well, for many reasons. And one of them being is I know the value, I don't know if value is the right word, but someone who does the work so intimately with themselves, it's incredibly transformative, powerful, centered, when you get to offer that work for other people.
Yeah.
So you hold such a depth and capacity, and that is such a gift, so that when clients show up, no matter where they're at, they're going to be able to be met at any of those different stages. And that is such an incredible thing. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. Don't forget to hit the follow and subscribe button. And as always, you can join other like-minded souls on Instagram. You can find me at emilymarie.energy or in the free Facebook group. The links are in the show notes. Bye. This podcast is intended to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal spiritual journey towards inner peace, inner calm, developing your intuition, and inner wisdom. I am not a psychologist, financial advisor, or a medical doctor, and do not offer any professional health, financial, or medical advice. If you are suffering from any psychological, financial, or medical conditions, please seek help from a qualified professional.